This is your one-stop shop for all things deals, discounts and tips when it comes to buying pretty much anything. And on this week's episode, a new report says London is now more expensive than Monte Carlo. Plus, where do you stand on tipping and how do you feel about compulsory service charges? Welcome to False Economy.
Powered by Hot UK Deals, the UK's number one app for deals, discounts and freebies.
I'm Vic Slayton, consumer champion, shopaholic and occasional comedian. And beside me, the man, the legend, Paul Watson.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good, good. I always think when you do the intro and you ask all those questions, I feel like I'm supposed to be answering them as you go along. And I'm sort of like, oh, but yes, no.
No.
Monte Carlo. So it's a lot to take in.
Yeah. How do I feel about that? Well, we do ask you later on, so keep that in mind. Mm,
yeah. But you're not trying to like check the podcast off in 25 seconds, which is what I'm sort of assuming you're trying to do there. But yeah.
I think there are some people that would like us to.
Niche, wouldn't it?
Nonetheless, we persevere. We are a long-form podcast, take it or leave it, and a lot of people are leaving it. No, they're not. Hello, lovely listeners. Introducing in the red corner, it's Charlotte Redding.
Hello.
Hi.
The red corner today.
You're in the
red
corner.
Am I normally
the blue
today? Corner? I've lost track.
I don't know.
Of this weird boxing analogy.
You're in the, I don't know, the top pocket?
The top.
We were talking about snooker earlier.
Right. Yes, we were talking about snooker earlier.
It's not right, is it? Anyway, how are you?
This is not that kind of podcast.
in the top pocket. It's
I don't have horrible imposter syndrome if I'm asked any further questions. This is not the podcast for me.
All right. So we'll move on. Excellent. Good sparkling gold banter. That's done. Tick. So apparently London is now more expensive to live than Monte Carlo, which is the first word. It is stereotypically for rich wankers, right?
Oh yeah, 100%. Mm. Like if someone was like, oh, think of a rich, I say country, but city state, a rich place.
Yeah.
Mm. You'd go Monaco. And then as a subset of that, to go even richer, you'd go Monte Carlo, wouldn't you?
Yeah. You don't go there unless you've got lots of money to spend.
We think of Cannes as well. If anyone ever says they're going to Cannes, it's like, oh.
And it's, oh, Cannes is lovely though.
Is it?
It looks like it's so clean there. You feel like you're in a Hollywood movie. Like, it's like, this cannot be real. Like, the buildings are all really clean. The sky is blue. The ocean is blue. There's alfresco dining. I went to Nice, which is very cheap to get to. It was a very cheap flight, I think, on SleazyJet or EasyJet. You know, we don't want to alienate potential sponsors. EasyJet.
Yeah, which you definitely haven't done that.
Went on EasyJet. Lovely, lovely. EasyJet. And I'm sure we had a great flight. Then we got there and you could get to Monte Carlo and Cannes within about an hour from Nice. Ooh. On a really fancy train that I think cost about €5. So we were able to do two day trips, one to Cannes, one to Monte Carlo, which was quite enough to laugh at the idea that anybody was in Monte Carlo. You can't even, because the big thing is casinos, you have to pay to even look at it.
What?
It was like, I think it was a €25 charge.
Jesus.
To go into the casino and look at it without even spending a single penny on gambling.
To be fair, otherwise it would be mobbed with pillocks, wouldn't it?
But you're kind of stuck there then, because there was also only one cafe next to the casino and we were all there. So we were all fighting over tables and then you have to pay whatever price they want to charge you.
What, so it's more like Monte Carlo is that small that it is just like literally a casino and a coffee shop.
You can get around it very, very quickly. But you do feel like you're in a racing game. I recognised all the roads. It was weird because I hadn't been there. Yeah. But because of like games like Grand Prix 2 that I used to play when I was a kid, it was very surreal. So yeah, in short, go there for a couple of hours, manage your expectations, take a lot of money, even if you don't plan to spend any, because everything costs too much money. But do you know where else it costs money? Apparently, London.
Yes, it is more expensive. So
people live in Monte Carlo, though?
Do people live in
supposedly,
London?
Do you know what? I've got a stat here, which I think is going to be kind of
or our mind's going to get
eye-wateringly upsetting in so many ways. So the way they've worked out this this ranking of the most expensive and most affordable capital cities in Europe, the average salary post-tax in London is, I mean, this is already a little bit, I mean, this is average across all of London, so it's high, £4,169, which is a lot of money post-tax. In Monte Carlo, it's £8,406 is the average post-tax salary per month.
Whoa.
As a proportion of that, so they worked this out based on this idea of renting a one-bed apartment in or around the city centre of one of these capital cities. And that, in, you know, with broadband and bills and a travel pass and a meal out for two each month.
Girls in white dresses with
all of the little things that would consider, you know, an average life. But on rent alone, as a proportion, the average rent in London is £2,064 for that one-bed apartment.
But you're saying fairly central. I mean, no one lives fairly central in London. I'm almost surprised it's as low as that.
Like, I imagine that covers like zone 1 to 3.
Yeah, I'm thinking
it's sort of outside very central building district, I imagine, is the way they've done it. Otherwise, it would just skew massively. But basically, you'd be paying 49% of your post-tax income on rent. In Monte Carlo, it's just 37%.
Oh, so we'll all move to Monte Carlo then?
Yeah, apparently so.
Isn't this a bit skewed because the Monte Carlo salaries must be like...
Well, yeah, on average... £8,500 a month post-tax. I mean, it's a famous tax haven, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, but there's also a lot of hospitality there. Someone's got to work in the 5-star Michelin restaurant.
True. Do you want to hear the top 5 of our most expensive capital cities?
Oh, yeah, I really do.
Coming in first place. I'm going to guess London.
I reckon Helsinki's in there. Is Helsinki in there?
Not top 5. Right, what do you
really
think? So
expensive.
Obviously, first place London, second place Monte Carlo.
I'm still thinking like Scandinavia,
can
Stockholm.
Can you guess third place? Nope.
Oslo.
No.
What?
See, this is wild. I don't have the exact figures on the salaries. This third place, Dublin.
Oh, I wouldn't have got that.
I suppose there's not that much housing there necessarily compared to other places. So
it's
relatively self-contained. It's quite small. Pints are very expensive. I've heard from every single person who's ever been.
4th place, Luxembourg.
Oh, a bit of a technicality, that one. Yeah, because that's like a Monte Carlo sort of situation, right?
Yes. And coming in 5th place to round out our top 5, hello, London! It's Switzerland calling! We're in Bern, 5th place.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
There we go.
But we also have our top 5 most affordables, essentially the bottom 5
places
of this index.
Let's have it.
What do you think is the cheapest capital city to live in?
Chisinau. No, that's not a
good song. Does it have to be in EU or just Europe?
Europe.
I would go Chisinau, Moldova. But that's just a guess. But it is very cheap there.
I mean, I
said
Hull.
Paul?
And that's
our second place most affordable.
Oh, no, second.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Chisinau, Moldova, second place.
Oh.
Paul knows.
Yeah, I don't know. What's number one?
Our survey says it's a real fact. Right, can anyone get our number one? Number one cheapest.
I'm really enjoying this game, but this is my kind of game. But if it's not Chisinau, then you're going down in cost from there. Skopje?
Nope. Number one. Bucharest, Romania.
Oh, I almost guessed Bucharest. But weird that that would be cheaper than Chisinau. Yeah, well, that's odd to me because Moldova generally
but
is like the...
you've got to remember a lot of this is proportional to what the average earnings are in that place. You know, how much the cost of living is. It's different as a tourist of what we consider expensive to live somewhere because people say that Copenhagen, for example, is an incredibly expensive place. You'd be like, oh, it's so expensive there.
We're talking about pints again, aren't we?
Yeah.
What if we're like, oh, it's very cheap or it's very expensive? We're thinking about pints.
Yeah, because that is the only way that you ever compare. That's like the shorthand,
like,
isn't it? It's like, how much does a pint? And it's always something ridiculous. Whenever you hear about Scandinavia, someone will always say, I paid X for a pint. And the number always just staggers you. You're like, you paid 41,000 for it. But no, it's like, honestly, it's something like £20 a pint or something in Helsinki. It's something ridiculous.
Oslo is in the top 10 of the expensive, but in our affordable, we then go, we go from Bucharest to Chisinau to San Marino to Vilnius. To Vaduz.
Liechtenstein.
Liechtenstein, that's our number 5. But people
Paul's
always
found his moment.
I know. This
is great for me.
You've absolutely lit
podcast.
Up. You're being quizzed on European capitals, and I've never seen you look so happy.
I know. This is what I look like when I know something.
But people
you haven't seen that before.
I love it. You've lit up.
But people always say like Copenhagen's really expensive, but we're living there, very, very different. As much as you're looking at what, £7 or £8 a pint, certainly when I lived there before, like the average, or not even average salary, but fairly low minimum wage salary was worked out about £12 an hour. At which point, you know, £6 or £7 a pint isn't that bad.
That's a lot of your hour though, isn't it, on one pint?
Is London will be worse than that though, right? Like, so the this comparison, so like London, you're getting the worst deal basically for living in London.
Yeah,
right.
You're paying £4 for a Diet Coke.
Yes.
Do you know what else we have to force down? Compulsory service charges.
Yeah, I hate compulsory service charges because I'm a miser.
I don't think it's about being miserly. I think it's about transparency. And considering how angry everybody is by hidden service charges on things like flights, the fact that you get your meal deal where it's like, oh, it's a main and a pint for £8 and then it costs £9.25 because in the small print, it's £1.25 service, but you didn't get served because you ordered it at the bar. And if there was an option for you to go and collect it off the pass to save myself a quid, you better believe I'm doing it.
It's never just a quid either. It'll be like a 15% service charge or something on your bill.
They are creeping up. It used to be 10% was standard and then 12.5% if you were really impressed. And now it's 12.5% seems to be.
But also, like, typically the places that charge a compulsory service charge, I'm never impressed by the service.
Or it's one of those where they will take them off if you ask.
Mm.
And I remember this happened to me at the Blues Kitchen in Shoreditch. I want them to be shamed. It was about 6 years ago. So the member of staff that did it probably isn't there now. But nonetheless, I'm still angry about it. So we went around the table. We split our bills between the cards, including the service charge. We were 1 pence short because we'd done the calculation wrong. And she was like, well, what are we going to do about this 1 pence?
And I was like, I will take it off your tip.
Well, I was like, oh, well, you know, that this included the service charge. So, you know, it's probably fine, isn't it? And she was like, so you don't want to pay the full service?
I was like,
it will cost more to put it on the card in fees for you. And she's like, well, what was wrong with the service? And I said to her, I was like, well, this now.
Yeah. Like, you shot
what was wrong with the service?
You?
It's like, this is wrong with the service.
A pedantic Karen over a rounding error.
To be fair, you've beaten her there because what can she do then? It's like, when she said this, she's like, so I've got to be really nice to you.
At that point, I'd be like, I would like to now remove the entire service charge for everybody.
One piece. Sounds almost like bizarre, like this weird behavior because
but it feels like maybe they've been targeted or within what they have agreed to do as part of their job is to make sure everybody pays the full amount because it was just otherwise you just wouldn't bother, would you?
But also I think putting a compulsory service charge on changes I like to be able to choose if I tip a service charge but also it means that you can be an absolutely crap waiter and get the same amount in service as a really good one.
Yeah, it actually means you tip less quite a lot of time because if you had no tip on there, you would work out yourself what you should tip.
Because I think I have noticed it going on to just buying drinks over a bar now as well.
It's so annoying.
And they just tell, because you don't know how much anything costs anymore. It'll only be when you sort of tap it and go, hang on, that's, and then you look at your receipt and you find that you've been charged service.
Yeah, for
on a pint, you
for pulling a pint, right? Yeah,
like if they gave me the option to pour it myself and save, I would. Sometimes it would be better.
Yeah, I am a mug for tipping. So
you are a real tipping mug.
I am a mug for it. I think people who do well deserve it, and I've sort of bought into that vibe that it's kind of subsidising the wages, and they undercut the waiting staff with a view to them getting the tips to make up for it.
So you join 13% via our data of the population who would tip at least 10% consistently, even if the service is bad.
Yeah,
well, I would tip
because 10%. But 10% is really not a big tip, right?
Well, it depends how many of you there are.
Well, yeah, but like in a general scheme of things, 10% not a huge tip. I would usually, if there's no service charge put on, I would tip 10% just for literally
just
bog
for
standard
being there.
Service.
Just,
like
just
they
for
have
them
brought
getting
us
there
food.
Eventually.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, most people are seemingly a bit stingy on the tips. So, you know, 36% of our respondents only tip for average to good service. People tip above 10% for outstanding service typically. But then there's our people like Vix who will tip even for bad service.
Well, otherwise, there's, do you know what? It's less about what I want to reward the waiter with and more about what I would pay to avoid the awkward conversation of, please, can you remove this tip? And then someone going, why? And me having to tell them why. Like, I'll pay £3 not to do that.
I'd pay to tell them why.
Oh, right.
But I'm an arsehole.
Famously.
You know, we've got some people who say, you know, I don't ever tip as I think it should be included in the price. That's 9% of people would rather just pay a bit more for the meal.
Right, but it isn't. That's the thing. It's like, I okay, great, but it isn't. So the reality is you're just not paying this person.
The restaurant is a service that we are paying for. When I pay for a meal, I'm paying for it to be cooked. Not just for the existence of that meal, at which point the service is included in the price of these things.
I'm Charlotte's paying for a no tipper.
I'm a no tipper.
I just feel like so many people, so many like waiting staff are paid really poorly and they work really hard. So like if you do over tip them, okay, maybe that just goes back to the restaurant in some regard. They don't see it, but that's nothing you can do about that. But surely you've got to think most of the time the service is all right to good. And they're being paid pretty badly for what they do. So you might as well just tip them.
Like. It is largely attitude based, but also I do count myself among the 4% of our respondents who will only tip if they're trying to impress the person they're with, or the 8% who tip when under pressure if they're there with other people.
Social pressure.
So I put in the bill and say that we're going to tip. Because, you know, when you're in a big group of people and we're all like, oh, how much should we pay? And I'm like, well, I've had this, this and this, so I will be paying £19.36.
That is such a swindle, though, when people leave a lunch. Like, usually it's a work lunch and they leave a lunch early and they put down the money for what they've got and they never include service. And it's on the poor mug that decided to be the person doing the maths at his last to pay that ends up picking up everybody else's service. I say mug, it's me. I have to do that.
Yeah, you'll pay the entire tip at the end. Everyone else has gone, oh, let's pay for our meals.
Oh, we've got to get back to the office for a meeting. Here's £10.
I mean, to be fair, I would rather that discussion happen before. If someone was like, okay, so we're going to pay for our meals, let's all add 10% because that's going to be the tip.
Yeah.
Fine. I'd do that because everyone else is doing that. But I'd like, never suggest it.
This thing of trying to impress someone with your tip, that I think maybe is a carryover to when you were tipping cash more, because now no one even sees what you're tipping. So unless you're going to like announce it to the room.
Tilt the screen.
Oh, I'm just typing in my number that I'm paying here.
With your date being like, I thought the service was fantastic. Yeah. Shall we leave 30%?
Cash is the classy way to tip, because firstly, it's more likely to go to the server, because a lot of service charges now just go to the house and then they distribute them as they see fit, but not necessarily
in a fair way. It's just hard because it's so rare you're carrying cash these days that it's really hard to tip in cash, isn't it? And so you get that awkward thing where they bring over the thing that often has the amount already on it and you have to be like, can I add a tip? And then they have to basically reboot the whole system. Or you make such a big deal of what is like a fairly minor amount of money and it's like...
But compulsory service charges do take that away.
But they don't, because it doesn't help anyone. Well, they don't automatically go to the servers.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, it takes
away... goes to all the servers and one of them could be useless.
Well, that's it. Like, I don't want to tip...
all of them.
The crap one.
No. You know? But the thing is, even if you're tipping cash, right, in the old days, there'd be an expectation most of the time, whether they're watched like a hawk or not, for that money to go into a joint pot that would then be redistributed. Yeah. So you're never sure who was getting, like, is it that the person who's in charge of taking the tips at the end of the night and sorting them out and then just pockets? You never know for sure.
I've you know, been out for dinner with people who've asked and be like, how are your tips distributed? If I tip this, you do.
Yeah.
Does it go directly to you?
I think it's a good question to ask, because like if you don't ask, I guess there's just that view that the money you're giving is not going to what you thought it was going to.
If I intend to return somewhere.
Tip
to build goodwill.
Strategic tipping is also good.
So I'll tip a hairdresser the first couple of times I get a haircut there, because it ensures that because I've done this before.
And let them worry the other times they've done a bad job because you haven't tipped that time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't set precedent, but it
rocking
means...
back and forth at night going, why didn't she like it?
I've done this before because obviously, I used to go to the barbers and they'd be absolutely sort of rammed with walk-ins and they'd still spend, you know, they wouldn't rush... You see them sort of being like, oh, yes, this person's come in for a trim and they'll just go, done. That was me imitating clippers on somebody's head.
Thank you.
That was actually brilliant.
I have considered a career as a Foley artist. I do. But I think that builds goodwill. And then if they're absolutely around, they will spend the extra 10, 15 minutes because you're a good valued customer.
With independent restaurants as well, you'll often get like a little free shot or a better table next time. So if you know you're coming back, It is quite nice.
That little limoncello at the end, or they'll know that, you know, oh, you know, I loved that drink that you had on the specials last month. We don't have it, but
we'll make it.
We've probably got, we can make you one. And I, so, I mean, to a certain extent, is that really tipping or is that me
investing
in extra service?
What I would advise not doing is accidentally massive tipping someone. So once I was thinking in the Philippines.
Here we go.
Yeah, I was in the Philippines and I got put in a hotel because my flight had been like cancelled or like delayed. So they put us in a really posh hotel and I didn't have any handle on the currency, but I had like a wadge of notes and someone took my bag up to my room, and I don't usually stay at hotels where people do stuff for you like that. So I knew I had to tip the guy, just gave him what I thought was right. And I thought I'd given him like a few quid. I'd given him 60 quid. So that guy would leave my side in that hotel. I'd creep out the door and it'd be there. I'd be like,
how can I help you?
In the end, I had to actually explain to him. I was like, I'm really sorry. I didn't know
you're
how much I'd given you. I'm really not rich.
But like, at the same time, that's almost like, in that situation, they would probably feel like you have tipped up front for a bulk of your trip.
I hope he's all right. I did genuinely, I just said to him, I'm really sorry. And he said, I'll give it back. I was like, no, don't give it back. That's even worse. But like, yeah. I'm sorry. I am not your pathway to
is testament to how tips should be used for good service.
Mm.
Like, I can buy good service with an upfront tip, or I can reward good service after a meal with a good tip. But some people are particularly stingy. So do you want to guess which city in this country are the worst tippers?
I thought you were going to like out the person then. I was like, oh God, who have you come for here?
You're so horrible to me.
Bad tip, right?
And the rest of your family.
I tip now.
You do now, yeah.
Because I'm trying to impress you. But
I also feel like this is a recipe for me getting in like the bad books or somewhere. If you say, guess a city that has bad tippers.
Tight city.
What's the tightest city in Britain? Yeah. Oh, no, I don't know that.
Okay, guess tightest county then. I'll let you, city or county.
Lean into those stereotypes.
Oh, would it be what the stereotypes are supposed to be? Because the stereotype would be Yorkshire, right? That's the stereotype.
Correct.
It is Yorkshire.
So in the UK average for being I'm not tipping person is 9%. In Yorkshire, that is 19%.
That's standard. I don't tip. Don't tip. No.
Yeah. And our stingiest city, according to our data, are the very fine. And actually, there's a really funny irony to this, is that just this week, this same city I saw voted one of the kind of like top three friendliest cities in the country.
Very friendly, very tight.
Very tight. Yeah. And that is the city of Sheffield. Woo! At 23%.
What? So that is the tight, that in the whole of the UK.
Nearly
that's
a quarter of people not tipping.
In
no
our
tip,
results,
no.
They said, I do not tip. Categorically, wow. That's it. And that is Sheffield.
They haven't even given an excuse. It's not even like, because of the cost of living.
No, just
I do not tip.
I do not do that.
Do you want to guess who our absolute ballers are? Our flashy pants, Mr. Moneybags, always tipping, happy to tip, and happy to tip bad service.
Soft, so like
soft southern
okay.
people.
Soft southern people. You've got two here. It's a tie. And it's the exact tie. When you find out what these two plays are, it's the exact tie you would probably guess.
Is it somewhere like Surrey-ish, like Guildford? Not Guildford. I don't know, like somewhere
they
like...
They're people with too much with money because they don't tip, aren't they?
Okay. I'm going to give you a hint. They both start with the same letter.
Well, that's not a massive tip. I mean, you're looking at the
two cities. Start with the
Brighton.
Same. Yeah, that's one of them.
Bournemouth?
Bristol.
Oh, there you go.
Brighton and Bristol.
To be fair, two of the loveliest, nicest places.
Yeah,
really
artsy,
people.
Generous,
so there you go.
Yeah. Hippie vibes.
No surprises there,
so,
really.
You know, the kind of Green Party strongholds. You know?
Yeah, that's true, actually.
And they are, that is 20% of people would tip bad service in those places.
Yeah.
Well, I'm proud of Bristol.
There we go.
I'm proud of Sheffield
good
being tight.
Yeah, so there we go. Tip or don't tip, we don't care. Let us know what you do though.
I like that being the segment. That's what it would be on, like on one of those like daytime TV shows. Yeah. Tip or don't tip, colon, we don't care.
It's time for the quickfire round.
Yeah.
I am number one on the quickfire round. We're actually going straight into it.
Oh my God. No sparkling gold banter.
Don't distract me. We're going straight in.
Is she going to tell us the price this time?
Oh, it's a point, Paul.
the first ever fine point.
I just read your mind. Like, I read your mind. I beamed into your mind an item and then you beamed back what the price was and you got a point. Wow. Look at that. I want to know, for item number one, have you ever heard of the Densuke watermelon?
The what?
The Densuke watermelon.
Oh, is that one of those really expensive melons in Japan?
Yes, it is. You have heard of it.
I have watched a documentary at some point about expensive Japanese fruits.
Which Charlotte's not tipping. She is. Yeah. She's watching documentaries about expensive Japanese fruit.
I guess.
They are indeed grown exclusively on the island of Hokkaido in northern Japan. Production is centralized in the town of Toma, where the island's specific climate and mineral-rich volcanic soil makes cultivating the fruit possible. The Densuke is said to have red, juicy flesh, described as firm and crunchy, ooh, with a delicious taste markedly sweeter due to its higher sugar content. So what is the highest tier price this type of watermelon is sold for in Japan? And we want it in pounds sterling, please.
Ooh.
So the highest the price highest one is price ever sold
paid.
For.
But high price, so paid in Japan, so we're not importing it, which I thought you were going to say.
No, it's the highest price paid.
I cannot remember. I spent a lot of time focusing on the peaches. Watermelons have thrown me.
Japan
Charlotte
is really
doesn't
expensive
like melons.
Too.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just
I just sort of scrubbed that from
memory. Imagine watched a documentary about Japanese
they're all graded
specialty
like
fruit.
Meat. Fruit is graded like meat over there in such a, like, you know, we've got people who, they produce 500 peaches a year and they sell those. And that's like their annual salary. This because is they're just the best ones.
What I love about this is you have all this knowledge in this incredibly niche area, and yet it's not really going to help you. With the
oh no, I'm absolutely.
I really can't help you answer this question.
Sums
you,
up the quickfire around that, doesn't it?
It
like
really
we actually
does.
Have someone here who professes a knowledge of Japanese, like
premium
expensive
fruit.
Japanese
premium fruit.
I've watched one all about salt as well, and all the different kinds of salt. Japanese are real artisans of food things, and it cannot be understated. This looks like
I think Vic's just switched off.
Just
by the way,
died of boredom in front of me, which is so embarrassing.
Vic is basically doing the human equivalent of a screensaver.
You're talking about a documentary about salt.
I can't express enough how fascinating this was.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Okay, right, fine.
You again. It's not about salt. It's about watermelon.
It's about one melon.
It's about one melon. A single melon.
I don't know, 40 quid.
You haven't paid attention to anything, have you?
No! I'm good. I don't want to go too high. I'm going to say, you know, 500 quid. It's probably still point
it's
Paul.
It's just a melon. It's
£4,938.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've seen like a tray of peaches go for £1,800.
So why didn't you use that information?
Because yeah, that would be quite useful.
I didn't have to go exponentially higher than Paul and make a real guess because he said 40 quid.
The game only works if you make a real guess.
To be
on.
Fair, my real guess was going to be £1,800. So
yeah, so you still. Yeah.
£1,800. Well, about the same
grand.
As a tray of peaches, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, roughly speaking.
For one melon, but the thing is, I can't picture how big that melon is.
It's like, huge.
Right? Wagyu melon.
Different thing. Are we talking like feed four, like a little cantaloupe, or are we talking like
watermelon?
You're
not getting it in this room. If that's what you're asking, you're not getting in this room. That melon. Like, no, it's,
Paul, have you ever seen a melon?
Like, surprisingly
rare. But
rarely.
A £5,000 melon, to be fair, you'd want to believe that it is at least a big boy.
Yeah, like it's some Roald Dahl nonsense, we could live inside it melon.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, someone paid that in 2008 and no one's been foolish enough to do that since. So that is, we've marked ourselves safe from paying £5,000 for a lemon over the last 13 years. A lemon. A melon.
I love that'd be observed for a lemon, but for a melon, of course. No, it's fine.
Right. Okay. On to the next. So it's the 1 point Paul for that first round that we did completely silently and one Charlotte. Okay. Cool.
I'm not sure if I like being the beneficiary of corruption.
The way I'm telling myself like this is happening is that essentially Paul is just being tipped for good service to the podcast.
Yeah. Do you know what? Yeah. Okay, this is a question for the job seekers. I want to know how much the weekly job seekers' allowance is these days. Now, we've covered the price of rent, so this will be probably particularly harrowing as a round, bearing in mind what we've discussed. So are you as out of touch with the people who've come up with this figure? I would like to know the maximum amount for the straight allowance for over 25s.
I'm going to say...
per week.
I
spending your whole week seeking jobs.
I have
jobs.
Been on Job Seekers once in my life for a period when I was injured and couldn't work after surgery, but that was many years ago, and I'm going to put it at £112 a week.
That's a very specific and unnerving guess. I'm pretty out of touch with it, but only because I've been self-employed for so long. I've sort of been scraping
sometimes your
a living.
Job seeking is like you're getting no money for that.
Yeah, right. Like it's not out of touch for the politician's reason, but out of touch. Yeah, I haven't signed on for years, but I did sign on for a bit.
How much did you get?
That was ages ago. I can't even remember.
Just for fun.
Oh, we're like 2007.
Do they
like,
even call it signing on anymore? Because that's what
I did have to sign on in those days. You had to literally sign a piece of paper.
Oh, yeah.
Like it was a proper.
You go in
thing.
Every week and go, I'm still looking.
Yeah.
And they go,
oh, yeah.
You hard have you tried?
You had to fill out a little form of how you've, like, what jobs you've gone for
week?
And what you've done towards those jobs. Yeah, it was a whole thing.
And the amount of time that took wasn't worth what the job seekers were spending.
Your number sounds quite good. I'm going to go 125.
Yeah.
I think
it's probably risen more than I think.
I don't know.
I regret to inform you that it is £90.50.
Oh. Wow, that's terrible.
That was my first instinct.
Because actually, that was sort of sounds like what I remember it being.
Yeah.
But it can't have
that's
been.
Why I was asking you to see just out of interest.
I don't know. I don't really remember, but it may have been less.
For me, it was like 87 or something. It was some nominal
was
value like
that.
But I sort of figured that was some years ago. And Jesus.
So if it's gone up that little and everything else has gone up.
£90 a week.
£362 a month to live on.
That's grim.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. That's horrible.
So that's not uplifting.
It's the tragic fire round.
Maybe think about that when you're making your voting decisions. Anyway, on to the next thing. Air conditioning. Summer is coming, allegedly.
Holidays are coming.
Holidays are coming. I'm still in my winter coat. I tried to transition to my spring coat, which, you know, surely I should be almost out of by now. Too cold,
your
too chilly.
Your spring coat?
That tweed number is my spring coat.
I have a coat.
Oh. Yeah, I have a coat, but...
Well, I feel sorry for you. Imagine not...
I have two options,
imagine
coat or no coat.
Imagine not having a spring coat.
Imagine not having a spring
coat. Wow, Vic, some people are living on £360 a month.
But it's not you. What's your excuse?
I don't know.
Anyway, it's not about my spring coat that's completely good value for money and very useful. No, it's about air conditioning. What's better way to celebrate this in summer than popping a full air conditioning system into your house or flat? Full air conditioning. Don't just buy a little unit. No, just get it installed throughout. So we would like to know the average price for the 2,400 BTU, that's British Thermal Unit, and installation. We've got these prices from checkatrade.com. How much to air condition your house or flat?
It's so like it applies to every room.
Checkatrade. If they're not using ABBA,
does it go? No,
take a chance
they've got the one.
Checkatrade.com, then they are missing a trick.
Checkatrade with me.
Yeah. If you're still free.
They can't afford that, though, right? The royalties would be.
Yeah, ABBA, they don't need the money today.
Yeah. But they do actually have a thing that's like checkatrade.com. I think they do have that, but they've just got a guy to do it. It's called Gary, and it cost about like £35 instead of paying ABBA.
The William Tell overture, much cheaper than Take a Chance on Me.
So it's when you say that, like, is it a unit in every room or is it a central control console? A central control console that with like applicable filters and fans in every room.
I think my brain just went off when the melon was mentioned. Since then, I've not really been with
it.
Like,
yeah, it's the same thing.
Okay, so what size home, actually?
I mean,
it's the average price.
I mean,
they
don't charge you per
home.
Average
price,
right,
average home.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say £7,500.
Okay.
£5,000.
Okay, and that is point Paul.
Yeah.
It will be the bargain price of, if you live in an average home, whatever that is deemed to be by checkatrade.com.
Yeah.
It will cost you £3,196.
Okay.
That is £1,446 for the unit and then £1,750 for the installation.
Nice.
There we go. Look, something is cheaper than we expected. What a treat.
And it's aircon.
That never happens, is
it? And normally the luxury items that we are like, oh, I think that's going to be big money, like the tennis courts.
Well, that's the thing. It's privilege, isn't it? It is big money to us still, but in the grand scheme of how much we think people would spend on it, because they don't care, not actually that much.
Yeah, I kind of think if you're someone who could genuinely afford, think about getting aircon, that's really chicken feed. Whereas to someone like us, it's like, well, of course we're not going to do that.
It's about having the one-off money to do it. If it was sort of paying installments again, it'd probably be a bit more manageable and feelable. But to have that up front, pay £2 a week every week for the rest
for the next 25 years. Take out this mortgage on your air conditioning unit.
Well, technically 3-1, but 2-1 if we don't count the phantom round that I did all in my head.
The tip for Paul.
Yeah. You still won. See, you won on your own merit. You didn't beat me.
I hope you feel better about the fact that we know that Vix will tip bad service.
I am confused though. Charlotte won.
See, I'm so compelling. People just believe everything I say. No, you won, I think.
Yeah, Charlotte won.
I won. Melon and Job Seekers.
I got Melon and
Job. You got Melon and Job Seekers.
We were disappointed by the lack of accuracy because you literally learnt about these melons and then just threw that away and just tried to play tactically, which...
I did actually then give a real guess. I did say like my £1,800 guess, which I think is probably the price that you just pay in the market.
Right. Okay. Well, you can Google that in your own time, listeners, because that is it. That is the end of the show. We'll leave you now to air condition your home, buy a big melon and then realise you've spent all your money and wasted a lot of time and then claim job seekers allowance. And we'll hear from you next week. Let us know how you did with the items that we share with no expectation that anyone's ever going to purchase them. Thank you, Paul, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Charlotte, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for contributing. Thank you, listeners, for listening. We're always keen to hear your top tips and deals. We may well include them in the podcast or your obscure items, to be honest. DM me obscure things that you think Paul and Charlotte will never in a million years get the cost of. And you can visit Hot UK Deals to share tips, share deals and find, deals on items that you might want, really, because I don't think we cover that particularly. But yeah, head over to Hot UK Deals where there are thousands of deals all over the place in everything you could possibly imagine. And if you enjoyed the podcast, rate and review it. And if you didn't enjoy it, you have 30 days to return it for a full refund. Terms and conditions apply. Your statutory rights are not affected.